real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, the Christmas season is upon us, and if you're a mom, that probably means you've been running around at full speed trying to get everything set up for you and your family to enjoy a wonderful Christmas. Whether it's purchasing gifts, hosting parties, attending parties, trying to get your kids to light that Advent candle, or baking everyone's favorite Christmas cookie, this time can get a bit hectic. Well, maybe it's time to slow down, focus in on our true motivation for celebration, the birth of our Lord, Emmanuel, God with us. We're going to do that today because my guest for today found the thought of another Christmas to be a little bit too much to endure unless she made some significant changes. Let me tell you a little bit about her and her experiment. Alexandra Kirkendall is a popular writer and speaker and an established and trusted voice in mothering circles. She spends her days driving kids around and taking care of her family, but also is engaged in many writing projects, like this one that we're going to talk about today, one of which had a great impact on me, her last book, which is called Loving My Actual Life, in which she took a step back from an overscheduled, overcommitted life to start something she called an experiment in relishing what's right in front of me. Well, now she's brought some of that same logic to her newest book, Loving My Actual Christmas. I can't wait to dive into the content with her. Alexandra, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's great to have you here. I'd love to hear what your thought process was as you said, you know what, some of this logic from my last experiment might actually apply to Christmas as well.
Right. Well, as I talked to women about loving their actual lives, there was one time of year that seemed to be the exception in lots of people's minds. As in, well, I can be content most of the year, but let's just all agree that Christmas is stressful. Mm. And that comment really resonated with a personal experience I had in one particularly difficult year at Christmas time where I thought, I never want to do Christmas this way again. I was exhausted, stressed. I didn't enjoy all of the activities that I was trying to cram into our family schedule as I was trying to make magical moments for my kids because there were too many of them. And my personal experience combined with these comments I was hearing from other women, I thought, there is something here. We need to think about how we do Christmas and why we do Christmas. And since the experiment seemed to work so well with loving my actual life, I'm just going to bring it down and really focus in on the Christmas season. And so that's what I did.
So you used a box of tangled Christmas lights as a representation to how you felt at the end of the season. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you decided to do that differently.
Well, you know, when I bring out my Christmas decorations every year, the way that the box is packed kind of gives me a clue to how I was feeling when I packed that box at the end of the season the year before. And so it was pretty much typical that the lights were all mangled in a big mess. They weren't put away neatly because I was just done with Christmas. I wanted to just rip the decorations off the walls and put them in the box and put it away. And I thought, I don't want to feel that way at the end of Christmas. This bundle of lights became a representation of how I felt and how I wanted to make a change. And so when I pulled the Christmas lights out last year as I started the experiment, I said, at the end of this Christmas season, I will have a different mindset and a different heart towards the season, and my Christmas boxes will reflect that when I pack them up.
Now, I'm assuming that you wrote this book last year, so you actually packed away your things in a way that it would be better seen this year. Is that true, and how did that go?
Yes, well, you're right. My Christmas decorations are up. I put them up Thanksgiving weekend, the day after Thanksgiving. My kids were ready. And I did some intentional things, I will say. I did some intentional things. So when I pulled out the boxes, for example, outside, I have some fake garlands, and I packed up the lights already attached to the garlands so that all I had to do was just hook them onto my front porch. We were ready to go. So it did. I gave myself a gift the end of last Christmas for this November.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. So that means things are working. So let's get into some of the tactics that you talk about in your book. So you kind of scheduled these tactics, these ideas of how to make Christmas a little bit better around the framework of Advent. Now, I know not everyone celebrates Advent. So you can you tell us a little bit about it and why you decided to use that framework to schedule what you call a Christmas that's actually a little bit more calm?
Right. Well, you know, I'm not a huge Advent person myself. I didn't grow up in a liturgical tradition where Advent was celebrated. I attend a church where we light candles every Sunday during Advent, and as a family, we've tried to do that some years more successfully than others. But I've never really delved into the themes of the season as a way to prepare my heart. And that's what Advent is meant to do. If you look at the church calendar around the year, there are different seasons that celebrate different things and are meant to help us spiritually reflect on certain themes or moments. And Advent is really meant to be the season where we prepare our hearts for the arrival of the Christ child. And I thought, you know, the church has been doing this for centuries. Maybe there's a little bit of wisdom here. Mm. So how do I, as a woman, and it was last Christmas 2016, take these themes and how do I apply them to my actual life, to my everyday running around Christmas crazy? And so I took the themes of the candles that we light every Sunday as we lead up to Christmas during Advent, the four Sundays leading up to Christmas Day, and I examined them and thought, how do I incorporate these in? So those themes are hope, love, joy, and peace. And so I took one of those themes each week, and I thought, okay, first week is hope. How do I have more hope in my life? What does it look like to look for hope in the world? How does God provide hope? And why is hope important during the Christmas season? Why is that even part of Advent? And it was in mining those themes that things started happening in my experiment.
So a lot of us will get so engaged in the commercialism of Christmas and the things that we have to do that we will forget to keep Christ at the center of our Christmas season. Sometimes we get derailed a little bit, and I'm guessing that hope had a great deal to do with you being able to keep Christ in that situation, because of course that theme of hope with that first candle of Advent is people looking forward to this Messiah that would be coming. Can you talk about how you incorporated hope into the way that you were going to intentionally live that week out?
Well, I think there's kind of a twofold approach as far as hope and Christmas goes. There's what do we hope for this Christmas season? Because a lot of our disappointment and our stress has to do with our hopes. And then what do we hope for in general in our lives? And that points us to the Christ child. So it kind of gets to the hows and whys of the Christmas season. And that's really what the book talks about. The hows are the really practical ways to tackle Christmas. I like to say that women are the Christmas orchestrators in their homes. So for those of us who are making Christmas happen, that there are some hows there. And then the whys are, why do we do this all in the first place? So hope is a real natural starting place. It was interesting when I was looking at this word in context of Advent that many churches use the word expectation in place of hope during that first week. And if you think about expectation at Christmas time, it really is pointing towards we are expecting the baby. We say that often, right? When a woman is pregnant, she's expecting. But we, our souls, are expecting the arrival, and that's what we're trying to do during Advent. But we also have some real practical expectations. And so part of what I did is I took that word expectation and said, okay, what am I expecting this season? I need to verbalize it, maybe just between me and God, so that I have a clear idea of what I'm expecting. Because often we don't even verbalize our expectations. We don't know we have them until the disappointment starts to creep in. So it's really helpful for us to even acknowledge what we're expecting. And then if we celebrate Christmas with other people, which most of us do, to talk to those people about their expectations. So that involved, in my case, both the people I live with, who I tend to make Christmas for. In other words, I'm the Christmas orchestrator for my children and my husband, and then our extended family, because we have a lot of overlap as far as traditions and expectations around the people that we're related to but don't necessarily live with us. And so that meant some conversations there.
Well,
That led to things like budgeting. What are you expecting to spend? What are you expecting as far as gifts? And then schedule. What are you expecting as far as time together on Christmas Eve, on Christmas Day? Who's going to be traveling where and spending time with whom? And then that gets to relationships, too, and expectations.
That sounds like such a great conversation to have with people who are newly married, because we do have to have those conversations with our parents and our in-laws to find out what is the expectation, what's your expectation of the time that we're going to be able to spend with you. And like, if we had those conversations, it would absolutely strengthen some relationships instead of strain them, wouldn't it?
It would. And I know for me, I often magnify the stress around those conversations before they happen. And then when I actually have the conversation, it's not that bad. And so I think sometimes we avoid conversations, or I'll speak for myself, I avoid conversations because I'm afraid of conflict. And then the conflict ends up not being so bad. I also know that it's better to have those conversations earlier in the season rather than on the 24th, as you're driving to the Christmas Eve service and you're realizing that you have different expectations about how the morning's going to go or the next day is going to go. That's just not the best time to be having those.
Oh, that's good. That's just great advice. So getting everyone's expectations in line, from you to your husband to your children to your extended family, is a lot of work that can be done long before you're in the midst of the Christmas season, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting. I've heard some people say, you know, after a hard year, I realized that we needed to make some changes. I started having those conversations with my extended family in February, as in next year needs to be different. And then reminding them again in July, we're going to make some changes this Christmas. That tension and emotion doesn't tend to run as high during that time when there's still some space in between. The closer you get to the holiday, the deeper people are in their own expectations. So the harder it is for them to change mindset if you're going to propose some changes.
Well, and you also wrote about something I found so interesting, that at the end of the year, we all tend to use some of our energy focusing on where we are and what we accomplished or what we didn't accomplish during the previous year. And sometimes that reckoning within ourselves can keep us from actually enjoying the season. Why does that happen, and how can we enter that those emotions into this concept of hope?
Right. You know, Christmas is an annual marker because we can all remember where we were last year at Christmas. If you picture, where was I Christmas morning, you know where you were a year ago. And because we can go back to that place so quickly, we can often go back to, and this is where I was hoping the year would go. This is the direction of my life that I thought this past year would hold for me. And often life doesn't turn out the way we thought. So if we were hoping for a new relationship or a new baby or a new job, and we find that we're in the same place or in a worse place in our mind than we were a year ago, it can feel especially poignant during the holidays, because that annual marker feels like such an expectation that we had some expectations and we are not meeting them in our circumstances. And that's where it gets a little deeper into, well, how do we define what we expect and what can we count on? We can't count on our circumstances. We can certainly have hopes and even expectations for how things are going to go. But truly, all we can count on is who God is, the character of who he is. He doesn't promise that he's going to allow our life to go the way that we hope for or even expect. He does promise to not change and to not leave us. And that really points us to Emmanuel, God with us. So So here in this week of hope and expectation, even though it's early on in Advent, it already is pointing to the one thing that we can count on, and that is that God is with us in our circumstances.
Such a great word to take a little break on. Alexander Kirkendall has written a book called Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. We'll talk more with Alexandra when we come back in just a minute on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Well, has the hustle of the holidays kind of knocked the merry right out of your Christmas? Well, before you drown your stress in hot cocoa or coffee or Christmas treats, listen in, because we're going to talk with Alexander Kirkendall today about how we can save our sanity and savor the Savior. We're talking about Christmas. And Loving My Actual Christmas is the title of Alexandra's new book, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. So, Alexandra, we were talking about these 4 weeks of Advent. We talked about hope and how that was the theme for the first week of your experiment to love your actual Christmas. What was the theme of the second week to start loving Christmas the way that it is in your life?
Well, the theme for the second week is love. And love feels pretty approachable for most people. Concepts like peace and joy can feel bigger and a little more complex, but we've all felt love before, and so it feels familiar.
So we're loving our Savior, we're loving our family, we're loving people that may seem unloving. How did you kind of put that into action?
Well, I did kind of focus on the people right around me. What if I made them the priority over my to-do list? If you think about the second week of Advent, it's starting to kind of ramp up as far as schedule goes. That to-do list is starting to feel a little more pressing as far as shopping and getting things ready for the 25th. And I thought, okay, I can let those things determine my schedule and take my attention. Or I can focus on loving the people around me. And if those other things get done, great. But I'm going to give myself freedom this week to not get those things done. If given the choice between paying attention to the person in front of me, whether it's one of my children or the checker at the grocery store or my mom, I'm going to choose that person over the urgency of the to-do list.
You know, I think about that every time I'm checking out somewhere, whether it's a gas station or some sort of a retail store or getting a sandwich, that we do tend to kind of run through our days. And my husband has such a great way of engaging the person who's checking you out and always speaking to them by name, asking them a question. And I just watch their eyes kind of light up from this humdrum existence of checkout, 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 checkout. And I've learned from that what a difference it makes to take even 5 seconds to simply acknowledge the person who's helping you. And so when I was reading this part of your book, I just kept thinking about that, acknowledging that person in front of you, whether it's the person that you love who's part of your family or even someone that you don't even know.
Right. And it is true. If we think about the people that work in the service industry, for example, that we come in contact with every day, they are especially stressed during Christmas. If they work retail, retail is stressful during the holiday season. If they work at the post office is crazy during that time of year. The bank, it doesn't matter where, if they are interacting with people, they're not only more stressed because their job is busier, they're also carrying their own holiday stress into their work. And it is such a gift and really such a light in a dark world to be the person who stops, takes a breath, looks them in the eye, and honestly asks, how are you? You know, we can ask, how are you, in such a flippant way. People ask us, how are you? Fine, how are you? I mean, it just doesn't even sound like a real question. It's just a response. But I think your husband's approach of asking a question is really great. Like, so what are your plans for the holiday? Or what are you making for Christmas dinner? If you're at the grocery store and you're getting your stuff for your own dinner, ask about that person's holiday experience or holiday stress. I often will ask, has it been busy for you today? Just, I mean, that's a non-threatening question that acknowledges that somebody is working hard. And I want to be that kind of witness to the world that says, you are worth noticing.
Mm. Well, and I notice that you have two girls, correct?
I have four.
You have four kids.
Yes.
And
yes.
So are any of them teenagers?
Yes. I have one in high school and one in middle school and two younger.
So I've started to notice that when my teenagers ask me a question, how was your day, or have you had a good day or something like that, that that's almost an invitation to have a conversation instead of how are you fine, mm-hmm. how are you fine. And so it stops me dead in my tracks because that means, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to get to engage with the child that I love so much. And so even though parenting seems to kind of suck a lot of energy out of us, that's a time when we can truly engage. But how do we find time to do that during this time of year?
Well, As always, I think putting down our devices, and I will say this is an area that is hard for me because I work a lot on my computer. I'm connected to my phone for lots of reasons. Between work and carpool, it's kind of my hub. And my family calls me out a lot on where my eyes are and where my attention is. So just even putting my phone in a place where I can't reach it when my kids are home is great. I often feel like I need to have my phone with me when my kids are not with me in case of an emergency. But when they are, there is nobody that needs to get in touch with me where it's a complete emergency. So just putting your phone in a place where you don't have access to it is a really simple step. And it also models to teenagers that that's how you have eye-to-eye conversations, right? And I would say, you know, kids are still going to school in the month of December, so they still have the stressors that come with that socially, academically. My two older girls play basketball, so we're still in sports crazy mode around here. And to recognize that the normal stress of their life is still going, and they may feel some additional busy on top of that with Christmas. It may not feel stressful for them, but to recognize that their normal is still there. So still be asking them about their friends, their sports, their schoolwork, whatever it is in their life that's important to them, because their life isn't stopping just because Christmas is happening.
Mm. And they seem to be anticipating it in a very different way than I tend to be anticipating it.
Right.
I'm doing a lot of the front end work, whereas they're just getting to think about how much fun it's going to be. And of course, I'm stressing out about that. Seems like such a great responsibility that we have as moms to kind of, like you said, orchestrate the season. I'm going to think about that when I get up in the morning and it's dark and I have that little bit of time to just spend time with the Lord and to spend time remembering why I was put here and what a great opportunity it is to be that person who lights the candles, gets the house smelling good, and has that feel for when my children wake up. So what a great idea, Alexandra. Thanks for that reminder. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Alexandra Kirkendall on her book, Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, my guest today is author Alexandra Kirkendall. She's a popular writer and speaker. She's an established and trusted voice in mothering circles. And even though she spends her days taking care of her four children, she also spends her days writing and engaged in many projects that will help us, hopefully, enjoy our lives and also enjoy this Christmas season. Her latest project is Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. Alexandra, we talked about hope, we talked about love. As we move on to joy and peace, how did you start to incorporate those last two concepts into your Christmas this past year?
Yeah, as I mentioned, these concepts feel a little bigger and maybe don't come as naturally as, say, hope and love do to those of us, especially that are struggling during the Christmas season. I wrote this book last Christmas. I was doing the experiment in my actual circumstances, and that included the circumstance that my stepfather had died in October. So this was our first Christmas without him, which meant my mom was deep in grief. I was deep in grief. My kids were dealing with this. And I had to get my mind around, what does it mean to have joy when at the same time I feel so much grief? And that gets to really, what is joy? And I think joy is being able to know with certainty that God so loved the world that he came for me. And so regardless of my circumstances, I can trust in who God is and that he isn't leaving me. So that's my hope, but it is also my joy. Because if we think about the fact that we want Christmas to be special, that's why we do all of this Christmas making and hoopla in the first place. There's something in us that wants this time of year to feel special. And there's a commercial element to that. Like, we're told that by all of the commercials on TV, that this is supposed to be the special time of year. But I think there's something in our souls that longs for the Messiah, that longs for the Christ child. And the joy that we have is the knowledge that he has already come for us and that he is coming back for us. So that means that even in the midst of true grief, I can find joy in the big picture, in the truth that God is with me. And I mentioned that Christmas can be difficult for people. And if there is an area of your life that is hard all year long, whether it's a strained relationship, a health issue, a financial problem, that issue tends to be accentuated over the holidays. It's like, boom, it gets bigger and more noticeable. It's the thing that keeps us from enjoying the Christmas season. If that is a reality in your life, I feel like the Christmas story is especially relevant for you, because God didn't come for the perfect Christmas card or the perfectly decorated front porch. He came for the brokenhearted. So if this feels like a year where joy just doesn't come naturally, know that the reason that God came as a baby was to meet you in that place, to offer you the joy of life.
Mm. Such a great word, Alexandra. And you give such great practical tips on how we can create some space to be able to think about and experience that joy. As you're talking to people who are possibly running crazy, even as they're listening to this, maybe they're driving in their car and they're trying to think of the 10 more things that they have to do, what's a great practical way that they can create some space in order to experience some of that joy?
Well, I think at the back of the book, I give some real practical tips on how to deal with schedule and really saying no. It sounds so simple, but it is so difficult to do. Saying no to the extra invitations. And so we get back to that question of, what do I want to remember a year from now, 10 years from now about this Christmas? That question is really going to help you prioritize your time. And so pick three main things that you want to add to your schedule between now and the holiday. And then feel free, you have my permission, to say no to the additional invitations that are extra. And that's going to give you some space, and it's going to free you of some stress to really be in the moment. The other thing is paying attention to the story and being grateful, creating a list of what you're grateful for. So if we pay attention to the story, that means being in scripture and in prayer around the miracle of God coming as a baby. I think just 10 minutes a day, whether we have 25 days left until Christmas or 2 days left until Christmas, we can start this practice of saying, I'm going to set aside 10 minutes a day. That early morning hour that we just mentioned is a great time to do it, or late at night when everyone's tucked into bed or the house is quiet. Just try to find 10 uninterrupted minutes where you can either read the Christmas story straight from scripture, or you can put on a significant Christmas carol that means something to you, and thank God for coming. Thank him for your life. Thank him for new life that he offers through Christ. And thank him for the good things in your life. And start naming them off, maybe writing them down. And in that place of gratitude, joy will sprout.
Well, and one of the practical tips that you mentioned that allowed space for that is to have your gifts purchased and wrapped a couple of days before Christmas. I think the 22nd was the benchmark for you. What did that do for you to be able to experience those last couple of days just being pretty much ready?
Right. Well, you know, I will say I wasn't 100% successful in that goal, but I was a lot closer because I set the goal than I would have been had I not set it at all, because I tend to be a procrastinator in general. Some listeners may already have had their Christmas presents wrapped for months, but I am not that person. So what that did, it could be presents. It could be anything. It could be cleaning your house. It could be preparing the Christmas ham. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever's on your to-do list, if you can get it done earlier, it gives your last week of Advent self, a gift of peace and joy. And so it's kind of like when at the end of last Christmas, I wrapped up those Christmas lights all neat and tidy and put them in the box. I was giving my November self a gift. Give your December 24th self a gift and get some things done now that you know you tend to put off.
Well, and I was never so happy than to get a recipe from one of my friends that said, make ahead mashed potatoes. And she said, you can make these the night before. And I thought, that is the most brilliant thing I've ever heard. But it just goes to show that there are little things that we can probably do a day, a week ahead of time so that we are not going crazy on the 24th or the 25th. And things that it's a gift to ourselves, but it's also a gift to the people who are around us. Or I can speak for myself and say it's definitely a gift for the people who are around me on that day if I can get some things done ahead of time.
Right, because then you're not stressed and you're more fun.
Right.
You want to be the fun mom, right?
I want to be the fun mom, at least for a day or two. Not being the stressful mom is a good thing. Well, how about peace as we move on to that last week? Now, of course, it feels peaceful when I'm finally sitting down, but the days leading up to it, they don't seem so peaceful, Alexandra.
I know. And I think we really need to give ourselves permission the last week to let go of a lot of things. Those expectations we had, as it's getting closer, we often come to a crossroads where we can say, at least I do, I'm either going to choose to push ahead and get this done and be stressed as a result, or I'm going to let it go and be less stressed. And so that last week, I would encourage people to let some things go that are just going to create some stress. I remember the day, it was either the 23rd or 24th in the book, I was having an especially hard day dealing with the loss that I had that year and knowing that my stepdad wasn't going to be there for Christmas Eve, for Christmas morning. And it was the first time in years that he wasn't going to be with me. And I was really just kind of freaking out about the breakfast casserole that that I wanted to make, because it was what I always made, but it was creating so much grief because it became this symbol to me of this Christmas is going to be different. I'm trying to make it the same. This is the same egg casserole I always make, but I can't control the fact that this Christmas is going to be different. And my husband just gave me permission to not make it. He said, then don't do it. Nobody's going to care. And then it turned out that my 11-year-old did care. And then that gave me a new purpose. I was making it for her. So for some reason in my mind, that changed the whole purpose behind it. And I was okay with making it. But I needed about an hour where I just gave myself permission to not. And if there is something in your schedule, on your to-do list that is creating stress, either because it's triggering a memory or grief, or it just is hard to get to because you only have 24 hours in a day, then I give you permission to let it go. And the people around you are going to appreciate it because it's going to make you a less stressed and grumpy person. Now, if they make a big deal of it, explain to them. This is where expectations come in. We kind of have to keep revisiting those throughout the season as it gets closer to Christmas. And you can say, this is my expectation. If I do it, I expect I'm going to be grumpy. Mm-hmm. And your expectation was it was going to get done. So is there a third way? Can you help me make it happen if it's really important to them?
Hmm. I feel like those conversations take place in my house usually, and it's surrounding making things that people like. Yeah. I mean, there are four different Christmas cookies that are the favorites. Everyone has their own different favorite. And if I don't make one, then I seem to be in trouble with the other person. But when I make them all, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of gratitude that goes along with it. So I think you're right that people have an expectation. And when those expectations aren't fulfilled, whether it's my own expectation or someone in my house's expectation, that people do tend to react in a way that's not necessarily positive and certainly not very peaceful. But what a great idea to have those conversations ahead of time so that no one gets surprised. And even if it's something as trivial, it seems, by a Christmas cookie or an egg bake or some sort of a Christmas treat, those things are important for people to be able to experience Christmas the way that they expected. Or me being able to go to a particular church service where hymns are sung in a way that really glorifies God, that's something that's really important for me. So to be able to voice all those things, it just sounds like a really great way to have conversations with those who you care about.
Right. And, you know, I think the Christmas cookie one, it does sound trivial, but I've had that same issue in my house where I find myself in the kitchen making cookies thinking, wait a minute, you all said you were going to help. And so last year, I just said, everybody pick one. And when I'm making that cookie, you need to be in the kitchen helping me because I am not the cookie maker. For some women, that brings a ton of joy. For me, it doesn't, but I'm willing to do it with my children if it brings them joy. So it's just that laying out of expectations.
Mm. Well, you know, we tend to think of peace on earth, goodwill toward men, that this should be somehow attainable during Christmas with our eyes totally focused on why Jesus came in the first place. But when Jesus came into the world, it was indeed not peaceful.
Mm-hmm. I know. We look at the first Christmas story, and it really does reflect, in some ways, all of our modern stressors. When I talk to women about what stresses them during Christmas, it's money, relationships, and schedule. And Mary and Joseph, I mean, had they had enough money, they probably would have had a room at the inn. Had Mary not gotten pregnant, probably things would have gone more smoothly with her new in-laws. I can't imagine Joseph's parents were thrilled at the situation. And timing, I'm sure they both thought that this was terrible timing for God to give them a baby this way and for the baby to arrive when they are traveling and can't find a place to stay. But the same is true for the world that they lived in. The world has always been a tumultuous place. And so they lived in a lot of upheaval. So we look at the headlines, the news headlines, and we think, this is a hard time to live. And it's true, but it may not be any harder than any other period of time. And to know that God has been present from the beginning of time until now, he understands the circumstances that we live in and the times that we live in. And our job is to push into him, because the world is not going to offer us peace. He will offer us peace.
Mm, great word. Well, you know, when we're going to take a quick break with Alexandra, but when we come back, we would like to talk about how to make the most of our days that are following Christmas, as we're thinking about, once it's over, how can we best set up for the next year? We'll be right back with Alexandra Kuykendall and her book, Loving My Actual Christmas. Well, Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, we're talking about how to love our Christmas season. Perhaps you're in a season where you're feeling a little bit hectic, or maybe you're in that place where you're just enjoying this beautiful Christmas season. Well, I'm talking with Alexandra Kirkendall today about her book, Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. Alexandra, one of the things you write about is how to take those days immediately following Christmas and to make the most of them, to not only enjoy these last few days, but also to set yourself up for next year. What is the history behind the 12 days of Christmas?
Well, you know, when you look at the church calendar, just as Advent is the time of preparation, Christmas or Christmastide, or often the 12 days of Christmas, are 12 days of celebration of Christmas. And we typically think of Christmas Day, the 25th, as the day. But for more liturgical traditions, they still celebrate the 12 days of Christmas. And it's this extended period of celebrating the birth of Christ. And I think that makes perfect sense. We all get a birthday, right, one day out of the year. He should get more than just one. Mm-hmm. And so this period of time, culturally, in 2018, also tends to be kind of a dead time for families in that school is still on vacation for a big portion of it. We aren't expected often to be at work, or at least very productive at work. Sports and kind of regular activities, orchestra, whatever it is that tends to meet throughout the year is often on break. And so it's these quiet days that we can capture as a family to really live into the story. And so I don't offer anything that's very traditional as far as a way to celebrate that. It's more of a challenge to figure out how do we stay in the story for 12 days? Does it mean those extra 10 minutes of sitting in the miracle and praying through it with God? Perhaps. Is it having some unscheduled days, which is what I tried to do, scheduling some unscheduled days so that we really had some down and relaxed time as a family? Or is it continuing some of our traditions that maybe we always tried to cram in before the 25th, moving them to after the 25th in that period to really extend this period of celebration? Whatever it is that helps you extend the celebration in your heart and in your family and in your home, that's what I think we should try to do.
Well, and I love that you schedule pajama days and days where you can just relax together. It seems like we so rarely have those as families where we can all be together and relax.
Right. There's really so few days. And the older our kids get, the busier our kids are. They have their own social life, their own activities that they're involved in. And again, often that period of time, it's expected in their friend group or in school that they're spending time with their families. Well, I want to capture that. I want to take advantage of that. And so, yeah, I just had some days where I intentionally didn't schedule anything so that we could sleep in, we could be in our pajamas till 2 o'clock or all day long if we wanted. And I live in Denver, so every once in a while we get a snow day too where everybody is expected to be at home all day, and those are my favorite. If those fall in that, even better, mm-hmm. they fall in that 12 days.
So you took at least one of those days to kind of, you called clean up Christmas, to set yourself up mm-hmm. for the following year. What did you do during that day?
Well, part of what I did during that period was I decided I'm going to get organized as far as my Christmas card list goes, because I realized as I was scrambling before the 25th to get my cards out, that I was still at a point in my life where I was emailing people, what's your address again, or texting them. And I decided to create, it's not a novel idea, but I had never done it before, a spreadsheet of all of the addresses for people I typically send Christmas cards to. And then this last year, as I would meet somebody or think, oh, I should probably send that person a Christmas card, I would have a place where I could add their address. Now, that might not be your thing. You maybe have that covered. Maybe you don't even send Christmas cards, which that's great. But is there an area where you can give yourself a gift for the following Christmas year where you can get yourself more organized? Maybe it's collecting all those recipes and putting them in a spot with your Christmas decorations as you're packing up for the following year, so that when you're getting time to bake or to cook, you have them all in one place. Maybe it's the way that you organize your decorations. Maybe it's collecting some Christmas books that are on clearance after Christmas and packing them up so that for your kids or your grandkids, you have some special Christmas books when you bring out the Christmas tree. Just know what is something that's going to feel like a treat to me when it's time for me to roll out Christmas next year, and plan it and execute it so that your Christmas will be that much easier in the following year.
Mm-hmm. I say that every year when I pull out my Christmas decorations and the label on the box says one thing and I open the box and there's a different thing in there. So I'm going to commit to that as a way to pack up my Christmas this year. We'll see how it goes. You and I may need to connect next year at this time.
Right. Well, I think, like I said, we all have our different things. So whatever is going to work for you. And the lights became the symbol for me. And the Christmas mailing list was the real practical thing that's going to help me this year.
Mm, great, great advice. Well, is there anything in this experiment that you wish you had done differently?
You know, I don't think so. What it did, as in most things in life, is it shifted my perspective. When I began to focus in on these themes and then on extending my Christmas celebration, my perspective shifted. And that doesn't cost me anything. It doesn't take up any of my energy. It just simply shifts my attention. And when I focus in on who God is and why He came at Christmas, my whole season has a different purpose and a different meaning, which means all those little extras that I try to make happen are great and fun, but they don't become the critical thing, the crucial thing, and therefore the stressful thing, because they're just added bonus to the holiday. What the holiday really is about is remembering, because Christmas is an annual marker, that God so loved the world, He came for us. And we don't know what 2018 holds. We don't know if it's going to be a good year or a hard year. I do know that whatever the year holds, we will be better prepared to take it, to take what life throws our direction, if we are steeped in this message that God loves us and pursues us. And that's what Christmas is. It's the embodiment of God coming as Christ to show us and demonstrate for us the ultimate love. And that's what I want to focus in on. And truly, when I do, the gifts are great, but they're not as stressful. The food, the decorations, all fun, but they don't have to happen. They're just bonus.
Hmm. Well, Alexandra, if people are listening to this and Christmas has already maybe come and gone, or they're listening to a podcast after the season has gone, I'd love for them to be able to connect with you and maybe get a copy of your book in for the following year. How can we connect right with you?
Well, my website is just my name, alexandrakirkendall.com.
Okay, and we'll have a link to that on our author website, on our website as well, on myfaithradio.com. I know people can connect that way, and that way they'd be able to read about your other writing projects as well, correct?
Yes, and find me on all the social media places.
Well, that's great news. Thanks so much for taking the time to share with us how we can love our actual Christmas and maybe do some experimenting of our own. Hopefully, listeners will check in on maybe if they put some of these things into practice in their own lives and then how it's gone for them as well. I thank you so much for writing the book and for helping us to remember the reason for celebrating this Christmas season, Alexandra.
Oh, thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you to you as well. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Have a very Merry Christmas.